Welcome to your Route to Wellbeing podcast. I'm Sue Fullergood, and I'm absolutely sure that you deserve to feel great, and it's possible for you to pulse with energy. So if you're not thriving right now, or if there's something that's interrupting your thriving, then maybe this podcast is just what you're looking for. I've tapped into the knowledge base of experts in the 11 domains of well-being. Each of the experts has something that I think is part of the crucial knowledge that you need to be able to really, really take care of yourself. And so listen in and see if you can get that magical piece of information that's going to make the difference for you. Please feel free to share this with your friends and family, whoever you think may benefit from it. Please push the subscribe button so that you can be alerted when future episodes are available. Thank you for listening. Good morning. I'm Sue Fullergood, your host from your Route to Wellbeing podcast. And I am so excited to be here this morning with you and to have a conversation with my guest, Dulcie Mbiza. Dulcie and I met through My Sexual Health, which, as you possibly have heard me speak about already, is a group of sexual health providers, credible health providers, run by Dr. Elna Rudolph, who is my hero. She is an amazing sexologist, and she keeps us all constantly growing, constantly learning, and constantly being further educated. Mm-hmm. And Dulcie and I met there because she had done her sexual health training as well. And I just was so inspired by her. I just thought, gosh, this lady has something really important to share with us. And so here we are this morning. It's taken us several months to get this meeting together. And I'm so pleased that we finally found a time.
Yes, thank you so much, Sue. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to chat with you.
Yeah, there's going to be a really juicy conversation coming out of our final meeting this morning.
Yes.
Dulcie Mbiza is a nursing sister, mm-hmm, who works in the beauty and aesthetics as well as sexual health industry,
yes,
offering private nursing help and care,
yes,
to the public through her practice.
Yes.
And so that's basically, in a nutshell, all I know about Dulcie.
That's good. Makes it more juicy.
That her sparkle shone at me from across the room, and I just thought, I've got to find out more about this amazing lady. I know that you were a scholarship student on the My Sexual Health training,
yes,
and I heard that when I heard that you won the scholarship and successfully done your training, that you had been a scholarship from the Oprah Winfrey School as well.
Yes. So, all my life, actually. Free education all my life, pretty much.
Wow. The best education, and
the
you
best
managed to get it all at a scholarship level.
Mm-hmm. High school, varsity, my sexual health.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so now I'm going to hand the microphone over to you, Dulcie. Can you tell us a little bit about your story?
Yes.
How did you come to be so inspiring?
My name's Dulcie. I'm the child of an Mozambican man and a South African woman who are my mother and my father. I grew up in the township Alexandra. And you know, growing up, you don't know you're poor until you're like on the other side, all the opportunities that you're getting suggest that you might be poor. But anyway, I've always like been this bright child, always like been really passionate about learning. To be honest with you, while I was a scholarship holder or like a scholarship student all my life, learning has actually never been easy for me. And that tied into like a head injury I had when I was a child. But we'll get there. I grew up in the township Alexandra. I went to a primary school called Bovet. There wasn't really even a library. I remember the teachers used to specially bring me and any other student who showed interest in reading, they would bring us books to read because we didn't really have a library. But my goodness, when I think back to the school, we had such an excellent headmistress, and she really was passionate about education. But you know, when you grow and you get on to the next level and you learn new opportunities, you start to see the cracks. And nonetheless, that those cracks led me to the Oprah Winfrey Leadership Academy for Girls, which opened up so many opportunities for me, but also opened up a can of worms about my own insecurities and how the rest of my life would actually unfold. Because all of a sudden, I was the best, and then I was like the worst.
Oh, I know that feeling. That's really a hard decision to take.
Yeah, so my first year, or like I was on probation because I was really struggling. And in the primary school, because you're so excellent, they just like it's there's this thing where it's like they know you're good, so they don't see the need to help you with where you might be lacking. They're just like, she's smart, she's intelligent, she'll survive, she'll be fine. But I've always known, like, I was so afraid of mathematics. You see, I come from learning mathematics through a Shambok to learning mathematics on a smart board and feeling so unworthy and feeling like, oh my God, I don't belong here. I'm stupid. Oh my God, am I gonna survive? But went through probation at OLAG and then picked up, warmed up to the environment, because remember, we all were the best wherever we're coming from. It was the best students in Durban, the best students in Rustenburg, the best in KZN, the whole of South Africa. And yeah, I mean, there were a lot of traumatic stories. Like, remember, I didn't think I was poor. I didn't know I was poor. I got my winter clothes when I needed them. I got my summer clothes when I needed them. There was enough food most of the time. You know, at
Wow.
work. And then you go to school, and like the smartest kid lives in a shack. They used to eat pap and water, and you suddenly feel like your trauma is not enough. Like, I wish I was a little bit more traumatized. Maybe like I would be like smarter, I would come out like brighter, I don't know.
Wow, that's a mind blow to even imagine that your trauma is not enough and that
Yeah.
you could have insecurities based on that.
On the
But
magnitude
I
of your
can
trauma.
just imagine from what you're describing at that, you call it OLAG?
Yes, OLAG, so Oprah
Oprah.
Winfrey Leadership Academy for Girls.
At OLAG, that you went from being the star student all the way back to being just an average Joe with a not enough poverty and not enough trauma to warrant your position there.
Yes,
Wow. And then you
yeah.
had to fight to have a place there and to justify.
I had to fight. I did. I had to fight. I mean, I had to fight to stay in the academy because your marks were a big part of it. But I mean, while I was there, I was introduced to the power of my mind. As you know, Oprah Winfrey and her love for The Secret, or the book The Secret, or the movie. She always used to train us on how to do a vision board, and then I thought about, I used to do this, I manifested this, but I didn't know I was manifesting, you know,
You didn't
and
have the language for
I
it,
didn't have the
but
language
you
for
were just
it.
doing it instinctively.
Right, so it opened my mind up to that, and it's so important to shift your environment, especially when you're a child, and to see other things. So a part of my brain is like, what if I had stayed in like a regular school? Maybe I would have been like the top student all the way through matric, and maybe I could have actually qualified to do medicine. And there's those questions. And then there's the other side that's like, my mind would have never been the same. Maybe the environment I was growing up in was gonna negatively influence me. Maybe I was never actually gonna see a psychiatrist who was gonna diagnose my brain injury. Was going to diagnose my brain injury. But then that, my whole experience in the township, and you know, township schools, it's the teacher, the principal, the security guard. There's no psychologist, there's no nurse, there's none of that. And I think if anyone needs it, it's the children in the township. And then I was exposed to psychologists, clinical psychologists, educational psychologists, nurses, doctors, psychiatrists. And I was like, whoa, like mind blown. And but I've always been passionate about health, but that just put a stamp on it. And then I went on to study nursing at the Nelson Mandela University in Port Elizabeth, one of the best nursing schools in South Africa. I'll 10 toes down. And then while I was doing my community service there, I fell in love with the youth. I fell in love with sexual and reproductive health because there was such a pandemic of sexual and reproductive health and HIV in Port Elizabeth in the Warmer Township. And then, yeah, from there I was working extra jobs. I had like three jobs at some point. And so the business I run now, Gemini Health and Medical Aesthetics, is a combination of all of those businesses, of all of those jobs I worked. So I used to do drips on weekends. I used to assist a plastic surgeon with overnight care. And then I used to work obviously at the clinic, and a bulk of my work was youth.
Wow.
So,
And there's so many things I want to unpack
so
and
many.
chat to you about, but let's just start with a question. Of all the things you could have studied, how did aesthetics, I understand the youth programs
Yes.
because you had probably seen the importance of helping and developing the young. Through your own life experiences, but how come aesthetics and what do you see as so important about aesthetics?
So, this goes back to my childhood as well. I used to injure myself a lot. Like, I used to just injure myself, like broken toes, like it's very gross injuries and terrible scarring. I've burnt my whole face. I've had this scar growing up all my life. I've burnt my I've had the most terrible injuries. And I remember the anxiety that came with the scarring and feeling the fear of feeling ugly. So what that's just the foundation. But while I was in Port Elizabeth, honestly, medical aesthetics just landed on my lap. I didn't think medical aesthetics or nursing aesthetics existed in South Africa. I'm very iffy about training and making sure I'm certified to do everything that I do. And in South Africa, we don't have aesthetic nursing, and I hope to be a part of that change. But when I was assisting this doctor, there was such a gap. Healing from a plastic surgery is an ugly journey. And I mean, you go to get the surgery to beautify. There was very little therapy for the clients. There's no counseling. There was the scarring sometimes really used to get to them. They just didn't know what they were getting themselves into, with the expectation of waking up and looking a certain way, which is not how it goes. Anyone who is anything in medicine or, in anything to do with medicine, you know that there's a scarring. You need to heal from the scar. There's swelling. And so when I saw that, I just wanted to fix it. So I've always been quite a little bit of a red pen and a Tippex, if I can put it that way. I see things, I want to fix it. Like as soon as I get an idea, I want to fix it. I want to implement it. I want to change it, you know? So yeah, medical aesthetics actually found me at a wedding. I lived in a guest house, and COVID hit, so I was stuck in that guest house for 2 years. And one of the couples that was in the guest house during the COVID got married. And at the wedding, I met the plastic surgeon's wife, and I was like, I can just watch his clients. But then, after seeing the journey, the importance of needing counseling before, I started offering those services. And then I was like, the scarring afterwards, and I started implementing those services, and it's like they need lymphatic drainage massages, which they were not getting. And I started implementing that. So everything was just like a basket full of experiences and things that I've seen and witnessed that I wanted to fix. And so the nature of my post-op services is to make sure that your mind is taken care of during this healing process through counseling, through education. Your spirit is taken care of through counseling, and just your body is taken care of through the prevention of scarring, through, therapeutic massages and that sort of thing. So that's how I got into medical aesthetics. But also it's because I just remember the anxiety of having a scar and the anxiety of healing from something, things, and like waking up to go look in the mirror and see how like it's healing. Is it healing fine? And if you see slough and you're like anxious, which you don't know, it's just the process of healing. So I think knowledge really is power. So that's the angle I've entered medical aesthetics with. Knowledge is
And a
power.
lot of sharing psychoeducation as well as medical education, you
Yes,
think.
for sure.
And the sexual health part, can you talk us through how that became a thing for you?
So, as I studied, where I was going through the course in sexology, I kept having flashbacks of some of my peers from primary school, and I'm thinking, that child was showing signs of this. That boy was actually showing signs of that. Like, this is what was happening. So when I was working in Port Elizabeth, my manager took me for training to do youth health. So the staff was just like, they don't want to go for the training, because for them it feels like when you go for training, you're signing up for more work. And I was happy to sign up for more work. When I went through training for adolescents and youth friendly services, I learned so much. And I also came to the realization that the youth, we know about the youth, but they're also kind of like the most neglected. There's the negligence around the youth that we have as healthcare providers, and from like a nursing perspective, from a medical perspective, and as like teachers, because teachers don't really like know. You just take things as they come. My youth health, the passion came from witnessing what was missing in my primary school and seeing how the bridge formed in high school. When I was working in Port Elizabeth, there was like a lot of teenage pregnancy, there was a lot of STIs, a lot of like HIV. And in high school, one of the people who used to teach us sexual health in high school was Sister Ruth. She's a common name around my sexual health. I think she's no more. She used to give us sex education, and it was age appropriate, and it made you feel safe. It made you feel equipped for the world. It made you feel like, yeah, I can see a rapist from a mile away. You can't touch me. Like, my vagina is beautiful. It belongs to me. There's nothing wrong with it. But then I also couldn't help but remember the version of me in a township and how that education was completely different. And I couldn't help but tie it again to my experience working in Wilmer Township. Sometimes people fall pregnant because they lack the language. Because in the black community, things like vagina, penis is vulgar. Like, if you don't even have the language to say vagina, how are you gonna go tell your mother that it's itchy or that someone is touching it? Because you start to feel like you're guilty for someone else invading your space. And as I was learning and grow, like learning all of these things, I realized that a huge portion of youth health is sexual health. A huge portion of HIV care is sexual health. A huge portion of life in general is sexual health. The confidence that you gain from being equipped properly around your sexual well-being, it actually changes the entire trajectory of how you see life and how you see permission. It doesn't just affect your permission in bed or behind closed doors. It affects your permission in the office space. And so, having learned that, I became so passionate about the youth. And I went through learning maths, learning everything with a brain injury. Like, only got diagnosed when I was 16, because my dance teacher was just like, "You keep fainting. I'm dying with your fainting. You need to go see a neurologist." But not in that spirit, with care and love. And we discovered all the things I was struggling with and why learning was so hard for me. And but I think back again, and I'm like, the children in the township, nutrition is an issue, there's physical abuse, the birthing process alone can affect your ability to learn. The birthing process can be chaotic. Some of them are gangsters at night, and some of them are their stepdad's wives at night. And then you're expected to like go into the real world and work and be compatible with the first world, because at the end of the day, it's about the way you stand in the first world and in, you know, in the second world. And so my passion grew from that, the empathy of knowing that I was saved from so many things, but there's so many children who will never be saved from it. And after we have this culture, after you reach 18, 19, we expect you to wash your childhood trauma off and like turn a new leaf.
If only you just could. Yeah,
You
oh,
can't.
it's heartbreaking.
And you still sometimes make decisions that your 10-year-old is still trying to protect herself at the age of
Well, you still
14.
actually make decisions from that 10-year-old
You
self.
still,
Yeah.
you know, and you feel
And that's
guilty
horrible.
about things and you carry like guilt, traumas, and
Shame.
shame, a lot of shame. And I mean, I carry a lot of guilt and shame because I made it out. And I had a sister who had to stick it through the whole schooling process just because the opportunity didn't exist when she was in high school. And so how those decisions affect your adulthood. And my biggest dream is just to have every school deserves a multidisciplinary team of healthcare providers for the students. I had a friend, she always used to come to school overdressed, like she would wear a full dress underneath her dungaree, and she was just overdressed and had incontinence and every time I'm just like sexual assault, sexual assault. I just wish I could find her and like hug her and say, listen, it's okay. And I see how the teachers used to move around that. They used to ignore it. None of us could get away with wearing a dress under a dungaree. But I think at the back of their minds, they knew
But they didn't know what to do about it.
what resources do you like, where do you go? And after you open this can of worms, then what? Like, do you rip her away from her home and take her
But
with?
I mean, we can't turn a blind eye. In fact, my
Yeah.
niece and daughter were talking a short while ago and saying all parents should watch the new Netflix movie, a series called Adolescence. And I happened to watch it last night. And the gut-wrenching story, it's not true, of a young boy who landed up murdering a girl. A young girl. And the story, I won't tell the whole story because I think everybody
Oh no,
should
watch
watch it,
it.
and I do think all parents should watch it. But what really I was left with is such horror at how the adult generation, the parent generations, and the teacher generations are so far away from the
Far.
young people. And that's why I think it's wonderful that somebody who bridges that generational gap
Yeah.
can be out there. And somehow we've got to stay connected
Yes.
to the young. Like, I mean, my daughter always says, it's so funny, Mom, when I hear you talking about heteronormative thinking. And she
Yeah.
says, you know, people of your age aren't supposed to know about things like that. You're
Yes.
absolutely wrong. People of my age are supposed to know. And God forbid
And these
that
are
we
not new
don't know what's
concepts.
going on for our young people. I mean, not that they only belong to the young generation, of course, but you know, anyway, I do believe that you're doing a great thing by bridging that chasm and that void that exists between the older generation and the
Yeah,
young
I just
generation.
can't let go. I have such a close relationship to my teenage self. It feels like there's two of us and we're moving through life together. I remember the anxieties, I remember the insecurities, I just remember it all. And I can't help but think it's good I was in a girls only school. Thinking about the anxieties I had, I wonder what kind of decisions I would have made around boys. And around that, I had a huge fear of boys. And then that was tied in with like this hyper religiousness that I adopted. I don't know where I got it from, but I adopted a super hyper religious way of thinking where I wouldn't wear pants. I would wear skirts below my knee and didn't want to show my shoulders. It's just a whole lot of fear around it. And I mean, this is a topic for another day, but there's a lot of hypersexualization and a lot of hyper religion. It like ties in together. Mm-hmm. There's a,
and I think that's the cause of so much problem in the young, that sex is not discussable.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of parents think, and even maybe teachers and educators, if we don't discuss it, it doesn't exist.
Yes.
Instead of saying, put it in the light, let's make it acceptable to talk
yeah.
about it. Bring your questions. I'm going to blunder along, even though I don't have the right answers.
Yeah.
I'm going to say what I think and we'll mess around together, mess it up
yes.
together, and at least you'll be equipped with some information and with a channel that you can use to discuss the challenges
for
you're
sure.
having.
And I think a big part of the hyper religion was also guilt and shame.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, when my boobs were coming out, I felt gross. I was like, the poor man, I'm so sexy. I'm too sexy. My shoulders, I'm too sexy. The poor man won't know what to do. They won't know how to navigate this. And I also see now that we're introducing sexual health in schools, but it's still directed very much at the girl. And if we can teach the boy that he too deserves permission, that the girl should also ask him for permission, if they can go ahead, he will have a better understanding of what it means to receive permission from someone else.
Okay, so now you're talking about the subject of consent.
Yeah.
Yes. And I think that's a really, really interesting subject. Maybe it's too much for us to cover in this conversation. Yeah, but simply to say that I was talking to a young person the other day, and she was telling me that the way that you ask for consent nowadays, she says, okay, I'm quoting her, is by saying, do you want to come home to my house and watch Netflix?
Mm-hmm.
That is code for, do you want to have sex?
Yeah.
And the conversation is that unclear and smoke covered. And when I said to her, for heaven's sake, that's not consent, you need to be explicit, and everybody needs to exactly know the language that you're speaking. Do you want to have sex with me now, in this place, today,
yeah.
is the question, and then the answer is yes or no. And if it's a maybe, it's a no.
Mm-hmm.
And it's as clear as that, and consent is neither taught nor clearly explained, and it's all foggy because it's all about Netflix and homes,
yeah,
and
it's removing language.
God, that's absolutely terrifying. Because what happens if you didn't learn that language? Like
exactly.
I wouldn't have known. If you'd asked me if I wanted to come home and watch Netflix, I would have thought you meant, do you want to come home and watch Netflix? I would
yes.
never have thought sex had anything to do with that conversation.
I would think he's such a good guy. He
yeah.
just wanted us to watch
exactly.
Netflix.
Let's get to know each other and watch a show together. So yeah, I think that is a completely different conversation, and
mm-hmm.
one that's essential for us to be having with the youth.
For sure.
Not just about sex, not just about showing your beautiful body.
Shoulders, yeah.
And is that okay? And isn't that okay? And can you contain your sexual desires so that I can enjoy my physical beauty?
Yes.
That's another conversation, but I think you've raised such an important one, and maybe we've got to meet again and talk about that.
Oh, we could meet every week. Because you see, and this ties into the question about how the sexual health thing came about. It's just growing up in the township and seeing the harmful culture around girls, around their bodies, around so many girls that are more voluptuous, go through so much harassment. They are like abused almost. Like there's even myths that if your body jiggles a certain way, you're not a virgin. There's like all these secondhand signs of lost virginity, and
but which also imply that people have the right to undress you, to look inside your personal private space with their eyes. And that's a concept that should never have been
Yeah.
given. So there is a lot of education that needs to be done,
Yeah.
in order for us to make the youth and the older generation safe. And I mean, I had a coaching session with a young white girl who works in a bank, and she was telling me that she's been sexually harassed, and I'm putting it in inverted commas, because she put it in inverted commas, because it's not literal sexual harassment,
But
the black men have been discussing. He said something about the markets are as flat as this person's backside.
So I understand the inverted commas, because then it's more, it's straightforward sexual harassment if I say, oh, your ass is so like fat and juicy and I wanna get in it. But if you're discussing my bum as a flat, unattractive thing, it's like, is it still sexual harassment? Like,
well,
how
it's
do you,
very clearly sexual,
sexual
harassment,
harassment,
because it is not acceptable to discuss
it's
someone else's
body. That's it.
In a
I think that's why she then, that's where the inverted commas coming in, because then in society it will be like, but he just said it's flat. It wasn't sexualized.
Yes, but
was.
She's feeling uncertain about whether she has the right to say, I don't want my backside discussed. That's a consent issue. But we divert. Dulcie, I wanted to chat to you about
yes.
so many things, and this is one of them, but the real thing I was really fascinated about is you've had opportunities come your way. You've had opportunities not come your way by virtue of your ovarian lottery, if you like. You were born, as you said, a poorer, and I'll put that in inverted commas because I'm quoting your words.
Yes.
So you were born with a dearth of opportunity. And then you manifested, as you called it, many scholarships and the opportunity to have wonderful learning paid for.
Yes.
Talk to us about opportunity and how you manifest it and how you deal with the lack of opportunity and how you deal with
and
opportunity
abundance.
When it does come your way.
I think the core of that is self-belief and self-trust. If I could tell anyone to work on anything, it work on your self-image, work on what you believe you deserve, work on you trusting yourself, because when the opportunities come and they find yourself belief shaky and they find you feeling undeserving, you will self-sabotage. And I've self-sabotaged some opportunities. I remember when I left high school, I felt very basic and like average. And when I got to varsity, some people saw my light shining. And when I was given the opportunity to be in leadership roles, I completely fumbled it, rejected it, did not want to take it because I felt unworthy. So I want people to know that the things they desire, they deserve. But you need to work on making yourself feel like you deserve those things. And that self-trust. Keep promises to yourself. You have to, the small, don't promise yourself anything if you're unsure about it. Don't promise yourself that you're going to jog at 5 a.m. if you know that's not your, you're not going to wake up. Because now your brain forms these little memories that, oh, we don't trust ourselves. Oh, we don't keep promises to ourselves. We don't complete anything. And then when the opportunity comes, you feel so like unworthy and you just completely fumble it.
So let's just piece that little bit and backtrack to that little piece, because I think there's so much wisdom that you've shared with us there. You have noticed, you're saying, that if you feel deserving, you become a match for the opportunities that come your way. And that feeling deserving comes from the way you engage with promises you make to yourself.
Yes. Okay. And how you view yourself. When I was younger, like, I thought I was a superstar. Like, I was like, I'm going to be the president. I'm going to build old age homes. I'm everything. And I felt smart, and my environment proved that to me. My teachers proved it to me. Even when I was struggling with maths, when I needed help. Even when I had a brain injury and nobody went to check if my brain was okay. I just felt like a superstar. I felt so powerful. I felt like I could achieve anything, and I felt like I deserved everything. And that's why I went to my dad and I said to him, I don't care if you cut your toes off, you're gonna take me to a private school. I'm not going to a township high school. I will settle for the township primary school, but up there is where I'm going, okay? And I could see that he was like, okay, I have to do something. This girl's gonna she's threatening me. But I saw myself in that light. But I also remember the switch and how I started moving when the switch happened, when I was in probation and I felt like maybe I'm not as smart, and the switch flipped. And so when you don't believe in yourself, you move in a particular way. You engage in relationships that prove that you're not good enough. You engage in opportunities that prove that you're not good enough, and you just stay here. You hold yourself. And unfortunately, some people, their background, their childhood is just proof that life sucks over and over again.
Mm.
And like I said, like, and then we expect them to turn 18 and just flip the page and feel really powerful. And it doesn't work like that.
And, you know, the mind boggles. You know, it's one thing to, I think you're special when you are doing well at school and you come from a stable family, but to think you're special when you're being sexually abused, I think you mentioned a little earlier,
yeah.
You're being your stepmother's wife.
Yeah, your stepfather's wife. Not only personally, but like,
no,
children.
I'm talking about a child
yes.
At night and then trying to go to school.
And for your child.
The mind boggles at how you could possibly feel special under those kind of circumstances. So what can we suggest for people that are experiencing such unforgivable, unbearable trauma? Have you got a suggestion?
I think exposure.
Exposure. Okay.
Listen to other people's stories. There's so many stories of people who've gone through it. And I think also, while one of the things that healed me is vision boards, and work your mind out of it. Talk yourself out of it. Watch. Expose yourself to other people's stories who've made it out.
Mm-hmm.
And then take your pain and make it your power. Like, you need to learn how to, and it's not easy. I stutter when it comes to suggestions of this, because I think our brains are wired so differently and our depths of trauma are so different. But exposure is one of the best ways to go about it. Watch, we have like a lot of YouTube now. Maybe delve into the stories of people who've gone through it, and you need to make the decision of who you are and who you want to be. If you need to put a picture of what that is, put a picture up. If it's in writing, write it out as many times as possible. But to set your mind on who you want to be, not necessarily who you are or where you come from, because that can always change. It does affect you, but also learn to forgive yourself. And self-forgiveness is like one of the best. I think if we all learn to forgive ourselves, we'll probably all stop texting our exes.
Okay, but I'm just...
Why did you do
there.
This to me?
Hang on a minute. There's
yes.
so much in that. So... You didn't say it exactly, but what I think you're saying
mm-hmm.
is who you are and who you're capable of being has nothing to do with what's happened to you.
Yes.
And has nothing to do with, as Warren Buffett puts it, the ovarian lottery. And I love that.
Yeah.
Because I've always grappled with the guilt of all my privilege. You know, I know I've been privileged in so many billions of ways, and that's made my life so much easier for me than it would have been had I not been so privileged. But if your ovarian lottery gave you some real hardships in life and some real challenges to engage with, that has nothing to do with who you are. And if you've had trauma,
yeah.
you are still
worthy.
Worthy, exquisite,
yeah.
but full of potential.
Yeah.
And if you can just get your mind to engage with possibility, you can
and
move
see,
yourself step
and
by
learn
step.
To see opportunity around you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when I was diagnosed with epilepsy, I thought, I'm disabled. It's the end of me. But that was the doorway to my university scholarship. When I got rejected, I know rejection. You know, I won the Ovarian lottery in many ways, but I've also had my fair share of like just rejection left, right, and center. Like, whew, a lot of rejection. But I saw it as redirection, and I grounded myself in gratitude to say I still have this, and I'm just because that was a no doesn't remove my yeses, you know. If you must stand on your story is worth so much. Tell your story. Remove the shame. Tell your story if you have to. You have use your voice. Step on it. Step like all your battles, stand on them as a pedestal.
Mm-hmm.
And let it help you see a bit further,
mm-hmm.
you know? Like
so you in other words it's a kind of personal reframing of
yes.
your challenges into stepping stones.
Yeah. It's
and
not easy
into a pedestal that can help you see a vision in the future.
And I also do realize that for me to sit here and speak like that is also because of the privileges I've had.
Mm.
It's not easy for everyone.
Mm.
It's really, really not for someone to be like, what do you mean me being raped all my childhood was an opportunity for me to become something great? Like, that's silly, that's painful.
Well, yeah, that does have the potential to,
yes.
to minimize the suffering and the injustice and horror of someone's trauma.
Yeah.
So at the risk of doing that,
yes.
we are saying that maybe slowly, if you could see beyond it.
We're not saying erase it.
Yeah.
We're not saying minimize it.
Yeah.
We're not saying pretend it didn't happen.
Include it.
We're saying take it along with you. Stand on it.
Yeah.
And try and see beyond.
Mm.
You know, but the best investment you can make is working on your self-belief, working on how you see yourself. Your self-concept, your self-trust, your self-love is, yeah,
yeah,
the best investment.
The best investment. And I think one of the things that you talk about is basically hope and belief that
yeah.
things can get better. And have you got something to say for people who are feeling hopeless? And by the way, it's not just the underprivileged. It's not
yes.
just the traumatized who feel despair. Well, they can be, you know, unbelievably wealthy, successful people who also feel despair.
For sure.
I always say there's rich people's despair and there's poor people's despair. And there's still despair. And hopelessness. So what have you got to say for hopelessness and despair wherever it comes from?
Yeah. You know, when you said rich people despair and poor people despair, I find so much commonness amongst the super wealthy and the super poor.
And everybody in between, by the way.
Yeah, and then
yeah.
there's people in between. I just find it's a conversation for another day as well.
Mm.
I think time, don't sit in your, give yourself time to go through whatever you're going through. I don't know what is causing your hopelessness. And sometimes it's okay to just sit in it. Let it happen. Don't like grapple, don't fight it. Don't just sit in it and let it be. And then when you find ease, move out of it and take inspired action. Don't wrestle with your negative emotions, because sometimes in those negative emotions, they're coming to communicate something to you. They're coming to show you what it is you need to work on. But if you don't even take time to feel your feelings, and you're just constantly like trying to fight away the anxiety or
Push it
just
away.
push it away, you miss the lesson that it came with. And sometimes that lesson is like, it's your breakthrough.
I always say it's a light on your dashboard.
Yeah,
And if you
like
keep ignoring the light on your dashboard, you're going to get into
exactly.
trouble. So.
If you're angry at something, don't, I mean, yes, control your anger. Don't go bashing people's heads because you're feeling your feelings. But don't say, oh, I'm angry. Let me just find joy. I have to find joy. That anger sometimes it came to show you what you find disrespectful and what you don't want to tolerate in your next encounters.
Helps you
So
put up boundaries.
it helps you to, but also don't sit in it too long.
Yeah, I think that's a big one. How do we not sit in it
Too
too
long.
long?
I don't know.
If only you could just answer that question. Come on, Dulcie. We need an answer out of you for that question. But you're absolutely right. You can't make it your identity, and you can't get sucked into the vortex of it.
Listen to yourself, listen to your emotions, listen to your body. When your anger and your sadness and it starts changing your conversation, every conversation you're having is about it. Your body is starting to change, your health is deteriorating, then it's time for you to breathe in and out. Rather be neutral. You don't have to be happy. It's okay to also just move from anger to neutral if you can. Move on to the next best thing.
So you said something that really interested me, because I'm a somatic experiencing practitioner, and what we work with is to build a counter vortex. So if you're being sucked into the vortex of misery and despair and hopelessness, and you can just find a, you said, a moment of ease, you can strengthen that counter vortex and pull yourself there. Even if you come back here, you can keep, at least it's pendulating and it's not sucking you down.
So also what I mean when I say move on to the next easiest thing, it ties back to the building self-trust. If I'm here and I am completely just depressed and I can't get out of bed, I can't brush my hair, I can't do anything, I should probably not aim to get out of bed and go for like and wear a yellow dress and spring up and down. Because when I fail to do that, I've told myself, my subconscious, I've told the deeper parts of myself that this is impossible to get out of. I can't do it. Maybe the next best thing while you're sitting in the bed, just brush your hair. Do the next easiest thing. And I say this because I'm the kind of person who always wants to do the next hardest thing. And then it doesn't work,
You try and
obviously.
go too far
And
instead of taking a
then I
step
don't trust
out of the
myself with
despair.
small things, you know? If you're not a reader, but you'd like to start reading, you probably shouldn't pick up like a Twilight-sized book. Pick a book with pictures that you're gonna finish and that you're gonna feel good about and that you're gonna gain some trust and say, oh, I'm able to do this. And then pick the next small book again. Don't try and read the Bible. Like, and finish, oh, I haven't read in 6 years. I'm gonna pick up the Bible and I'm gonna finish it in 3 months. No, you're not.
I mean, I talk all the time about the sweet spot, and that is the
Oh,
title of my book. And
yes.
I really am a believer, if you're in hopelessness and despair, you want to bunny hop
Yes, the
one
sweet
little
spot.
step, into the sweet spot between despair and optimism.
Exactly.
And you don't want to try and go from despair into toxic positivity, and you know, everything's dandy and full of candy,
yeah.
But you just want to have one little bunny hop
and remove comparison. And if your sweet spot at that moment is just brushing your hair, bask in it.
Mm.
Tomorrow your sweet spot will be brushing your hair and your teeth.
Mm.
Don't look at Sue, who woke up at 5 a.m. and went for a jog and got and went for Pilates and had a coffee and saw 10 clients before 1 p.m. That's, you're not there. It's okay.
Mm.
Allow it's okay for
to
people
be where you are.
To be where they are,
mm.
and for you to be where you
mm.
are. Don't be okay staying there. I don't
mm.
like for people to be okay staying there. No matter how wealthy you are, there's always a room to be better.
Mm.
But don't, if you have to, get off the internet.
Mm.
Block it. Like I've done that, where I was like, Instagram is not inspiring me anymore. It's depressing me. And remove it.
Mm.
If your best friend is dandy and sunshine, and right now she makes you a little miserable, accept it. I think also we don't want to accept the feelings of jealousy and envy. If you can accept it, you can actually move from it.
Mm.
And
but you don't necessarily have to rub your nose in it.
You don't, yeah.
So if your best friend is bringing up jealousy, give yourself a break from her.
Exactly.
While you build up your own sense of
but
self.
If you remove shame from feeling jealousy and you can see jealousy as a form of inspiration, you'll be open to say, friend, listen, I so badly want to be where you are. I'm feeling feelings of jealousy right now and I don't want it to affect us. Can I call you when I'm ready? But also please leave room for me. Don't abandon me.
Mm-hmm.
I just need this space.
Mm-hmm.
You also form trust with yourself
mm-hmm.
and the other person. And
mm-hmm.
the next time the feelings of jealousy come, you can point it out instead of acting out on it. And you can, you know, you can maneuver.
Mm-hmm.
You can parallel park out of it.
Oh, we could sit here and talk the whole day, literally, because there are so many conversations that have come up out of, you know, this little chat that we've had. But just to highlight that last point you made, because I think it's just so critical, is the word communicate. And certainly watching this adolescence show last night, so much of the problems that we confront as humans is because we don't talk about it. We don't talk about what's happening for us. We just talk about, you know, and keeping everything happy and fine on the surface. And we don't talk about what's going on in the iceberg underneath the surface. And so I just love that you said, communicate. Tell your friend, I'm giving myself a little bit of a break because somehow your success is hard for me to swallow right now. That doesn't say anything about you or me, and I'm coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Keep a space for me.
Mm-hmm.
I love your success, and I also am struggling with my.
And I wouldn't want you to
emotions
lower.
Around it.
Like your,
yeah.
your the absence of success in your life won't make me happier.
Yeah.
But I'm just grappling with something
yeah.
right now.
Yeah. And
but communication is hard because
so
it's also
hard.
Shame. I think human beings carry so much shame.
Mm.
We carry so much shame about silly things.
Mm.
Do you know I still get like shy when I want to start a challenge and I want to improve something about myself? I get so like embarrassed to tell people that I'm just doing this thing to improve this.
Mm.
Like why?
Mm. Yeah, well, partly because we're shy to stand out and to be great. And one of the things that I always say to myself is you're 50% nice. And 50% poof.
Yes.
And so is everybody else. No exceptions. We've all got half our qualities are awful and half of them are wonderful. And largely because we're on the spectrum between the awful and the lovely. And hopefully we can walk in the sweet spot. And sometimes you're a bit more awful and sometimes you're a bit more lovely. Nobody is an exception. So it's okay when you're poofy. It doesn't make you a bad person. And
yeah.
so we don't have to be so ashamed of our bad thoughts or our puffy qualities of envy or whatever. They're human and they're there.
Yeah, I mean, if you lost your job, you lost your job. You're allowed to be sad. Mm-hmm. You don't need to find the silver lining immediately. Like, it will let it also, it will show itself, the silver lining. Like, it's okay, be a little sad.
Mm-hmm.
So you
be
can,
a lot sad, even.
Because what happens is, what human beings don't realize is that our brains don't know what's happening really, like, in the physical world. They know they're feeling that thing, they know. And if you don't take care of it, if you don't vent about it, if you don't detox from that emotion, you can't detox from things. If you don't, you first need to accept that you have toxins. Then you can detoxify. Mm-hmm. But if you never even accepted that you felt sad things, they just get stored in your body. And then you become reactive and you can't heal properly and everything is a build up. Then you never really move on.
Yeah, we can't oversimplify the complex. It's just very complex. And being human is very complicated and it's variable. And you make it look super easy, but actually, it's not super easy, not for one moment of one day.
I have internal screams, like hourly.
Okay, let's go. Have you got one more nugget that you can leave our lovely listeners with? Because you've said so many things, I don't know, hopefully everybody can listen and take one or two things that really relate to themselves.
Yeah.
But one special gift you'd love to leave the listeners with?
I think I've said a lot of the basis of everything I believe in, but remove shame and all the dreams you had as a little child didn't die. It doesn't matter how old you are. Make time, make a list of them and try and accomplish them. Make it a fun thing. It doesn't need to be something that's going to turn you into the next billionaire. But don't neglect the child in you, because the child in you will keep showing up unnecessarily and you're going to keep reacting to things and not understand why am I reacting like that. And like Sue steps on you, now you're pushing Sue over and you're hitting her because everyone at school used to step on you. Pay attention to your emotions and trust yourself that the things you're feeling are true and that they need attention. And sometimes when you give them attention, you realize they're not true. Just trust yourself. Trust your dreams. Trust that the things that you desire do suit you, and you are the best candidate for it. And then move always to the next best thing. You know, move on to the next best thing. If it's just to color in a book, just color in a book that day. And if the next best thing you can do is go to the gym, go to the gym. But listen to your body. Listen to the negative emotions that you're feeling. They're communicating with you. Your envy is trying to tell you what your truest and deepest desires are. Your jealousy is trying to show you where you feel like you lack. And you can just work on it. And just because you've realized it doesn't mean it's going to go away and it's going to heal. Give yourself time for it to keep showing up. And give yourself tools to manage it. And then it shows up again. And before you know it, it shows up just a little bit. Just a little bit. But it doesn't go away completely. This journey for me just, how would I say, just began. But I don't know what's at the end because I'm not at the end. But healing is not linear. Give yourself permission to feel those bad feelings again and give yourself the tools. Through speaking to yourself, through reminding yourself that you trust yourself, that you're worthy, that you are the perfect person for the job, that just because you had all these opportunities growing up doesn't mean you don't deserve the opportunities that you have now, And that just because you didn't have any opportunities at all doesn't mean that the opportunities that are coming, like, you don't deserve them.
So really, in essence, trust yourself
mm-hmm.
and trust your desires, because
yes.
they're important, and trust your emotions, because they're also important and they're communicating with you. And keep on going to the next step.
Yes.
Don't aim for the stars, aim for the next step on the direction of the stars, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
And include shame.
Yes.
Don't, as you said, get rid of shame, or you said, I can't remember what you said exactly
yeah.
about shame, but I think shame
face
is integral.
It, yes.
We all suffer it, so bring it along, include it, listen to it, and
yeah.
do whatever you desire anyway. Is that a
yes.
good summary?
That is a good summary. Yeah.
Are you sure?
The world's not, yes.
Because you said a lot of things in there, Dulce.
I did.
Still got to summarize everything that you said.
It is.
In a short
But
sentence.
You're the perfect person for it, because all these things are the basis of your teachings, and you know, so I think you're the perfect person to summarize it. If anyone, if I didn't know what I was saying, I would bring it all to you to summarize for me.
Well, I am really grateful that we had a chance to have this conversation, and I'm really grateful that you have, and you are, that bridge between the older generation and the younger generation. And even as you age, please keep your bridge.
Yeah, I think me
going.
And my teenager self,
yes,
we're like
keep
in it for the long haul.
Self alive, so that you can reach the young. And please keep educating my generation on what do the youth need to know, and what do we need to know about the youth, because we can't keep that chasm growing. We've got to keep that channel open.
Yes.
And yeah, thank you for taking all the opportunities you took. Thank you for sharing the story, and thank
yeah.
you for the work that you're doing in the world. Please keep on doing it and telling us how we can help you do the work that you do.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. I think it's such an opportunity to sit and speak to someone of your magnitude, someone of your skill set, and to know that the words I'm saying make sense, you know, and that they are heard, and they are loud, and they are not necessarily right or wrong, but they are worth saying.
They're valuable.
That they're valuable. Thank you for that.
Thank you. Well, you have been listening to your Route to Wellbeing podcast. Please follow us, like us, share this podcast with anyone that you think it would be useful and valuable for, and help us get some exposure for the information that we're trying to explore, and help us explore it together. We'd like to hear your voice as well, so please comment in the comment section if you have anything you'd love to say. And thank you so much for devoting some of your precious time to listening to our conversation. Bye for now.
Bye.
Please push the subscribe button so that you can be alerted when future episodes are available. Thank you for listening.